You are Locked On Ravens, your daily Baltimore Ravens podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome back to another episode of Locked On Ravens. I am your host, Kevin Ostreicher of Ravens Wire, and I am back here on another Purple Friday with Matthew Stevens of Ravens Wire. Matthew, it's an exciting episode today, the Combine underway. How are you doing today?
Dude, I'm doing great. Feels like I could run a 4.240.
For this first segment here, Matthew, I want to just talk about some general Ravens news here. And the big news over the course of the week, I think the one that I've kind of singled out the most is this Hayden Hurst trade rumor. It's something I've been wanting to get a lot of different opinions on. I've seen a lot of stuff on Twitter. The rumor is that Hayden Hurst might be unhappy, but he's looking for more catches and more, not production, but he wants the ball more, and as everyone does. But with this Ravens offense, you're not going to get the ball probably as much as you want it. The New England Patriots and the Jacksonville Jaguars seem interested. I mean, I'm not parting with Hayden Hurst unless it's for a second and a fourth, and that's in a minimum. Do you share those same sentiments? Do you think the Ravens should trade Hurst, hold on to him? What are your thoughts?
I think, if you get the good value for him, then certainly. I mean, you could stand to get an extra, like, first-round pick. The question being is, who's going to pay you a first-round pick? Probably nobody. Is it going to happen? Probably not, because Baltimore's probably going, look, first-round pick. He's a tight end number one in almost any scheme on almost any team outside of, like, four. So if you're already asking about him, it's because you're one of the teams that aren't of the four. So he's going to be your top guy, and he's going to be a guy that's probably going to catch 60 to 70 receptions a year, especially the rumors have been New England's been interested and Jacksonville's been interested, two teams that either love tight ends in New England or could really use a sure-handed, obvious guy in the middle in Jacksonville to help out their quarterback situation, whatever that ends up being in 2020. So, you know, again, I think personally a first-round pick is probably a pretty good ask. I don't think anyone's going to pay it, but weirder things have happened for sure.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be interesting, and I think this is a situation to monitor throughout the entire offseason. I mean, the Ravens have their depth at tight end, and I think it makes them really dangerous on offense. It's an underrated aspect for, I guess, the outside fan. You know, they would probably say, well, the Ravens have three tight ends. Why do they need three starting caliber tight ends? Well, it's because it makes their offense so dangerous, and it's pretty hard to defend in itself. But another thing I want to talk to you about, Matt, is Eric DaCosta had a press conference at the Combine a few days ago. He made a lot of important points, was asked a lot of good questions, and provided some answers that I thought provided some clarification. What key points stood out to you the most in this press conference?
Well, the first one for me is that the franchise tag is on the table for Matthew Judon, and that they're still in the process of having talks right now. A lot of the times, as free agency starts to kind of hit up on the horizon, and you know we're about a half month from it right now, guys start going silent. Guys start going, look, I'm going to head off to free agency, so you know, catch me after a team starts throwing some money my way, and we'll re-talk about this since we're not close. The fact they're still having conversation means, you know, Baltimore really does want to sign him, and Matthew Judon really does want to stay in Baltimore. The big question now is how much is that going to cost, and is that something that Baltimore feels is solid, or do they feel that they can wiggle on things? You know, how close are they? But the fact is that the franchise tag does remain an option. So it kind of looks like Judon's going to be in purple and black next year at the very least. Of course, things can certainly change there. The other big thing is that they don't know Marshall Yanda's status at this point. Again, we're about a half month away from free agency starting. Either Baltimore's going to have to figure out if Yanda does retire, do they have the guy that they can count on their roster? Or do they need to attack it in free agency? And if they don't find out until the start of free agency or after the start of free agency, they could really be behind the eight ball when it comes to getting a guy, a big free agent name to come in and replace an eventual Hall of Famer in Marshall Yanda. So a lot of things are still up in the air, and I maybe didn't clarify things too much, but I think we kind of know where Baltimore stands on really, I think, two of their biggest offseason needs this year. We have a little bit of better understanding of where DaCosta is coming from and what might happen in the near future.
And going back to the Matthew Judon news, yeah, the franchise tag is on the table. And I know we've talked about this with you on the show before, Matthew, but how often or how likely do you think it is that the Ravens, if they do franchise tag Matthew Judon, could a tag and trade be in play? Now, this is obviously an answer that's fluctuated over the course of a few weeks. People at first saying, oh, it's the only scenario, to now, is it likely? Is it not? I'm still on the boat that this could really happen and it's a realistic possibility, but how likely do you see it as an option for Baltimore?
I mean, I think it's got to be a very strong option. I, you know, just recently talking about it and writing about it, I really kind of see it as like one of three options. So either they're going to let him go to free, they're not going to let him go to free agency. So either they're going to sign him to a long-term extension, they're going to franchise tag him and just try to let it play out and maybe try to re-sign him at that point once they have a little bit better leverage, or they're going to franchise tag him and go, look, you want too much money, we're never going to come up to that, but these four teams do. Which one of those four teams is going to offer us the most? And again, if you're Baltimore, you just saw this happen last year with Terrell Suggs, with CJ Mosley, with Za'Darius Smith. Those guys left, and ultimately now Baltimore's looking at potentially 2 fourth-round comp picks in return for those guys for, you know, 3-star players, realistically. That doesn't add up. And there's some, you know, talk about the new CBA might potentially go ahead and hurt some things on that front, on the comp pick front as well. So I think if you're Baltimore, you cannot count on a good comp pick coming back from Judon if he walks in free agency. So if that's the case, I'm going to tag you and I'm going to try to get the most I possibly can out of you in guaranteed draft capital. And I think, you know, Judon potentially being the top free agent pass rusher in this class, I think you're, I mean, a first or a second round pick is not really out of the question. And if you're Baltimore and you're never going to be able to sign him, let's just say he wants $20 million a year and you're never going to offer him that, and you know another team is going to, might as well ship him off to a team that you can control and get something really nice back in return, hopefully better than a comp pick.
Yeah, definitely. I'm right there with you. I think that it's definitely an option that's on the table for Baltimore, and it might even be the most attractive option at this point. You don't have to pay the $16 million plus if you franchise tag him. You're not forced to pay him more than he's worth on the market. And look, if he comes down from his price and says, hey, look, I'll take $14 million, $15 million, $16 million over the course of a few years, then maybe I'd do it. But $16 million for 1 year when Baltimore has all that cap and they can spend it, I don't know if I'm feeling that right now at the moment. But finally, Matthew, before we head off to break here, another piece of big Ravens news was Marquise Brown had offseason surgery to remove that screw in his foot. He had the Lisfranc injury while he was at Oklahoma, was never fully 100% while he was playing in his rookie season in Baltimore. How important is it for him to have this surgery to get the screw out of his foot and get him back to 100%? His offseason timeline might be a little altered because of this, but how important is it for Marquise Brown to be 100% healthy going into his second season?
Oh, well, I think it's vitally important. Obviously, we saw what he could do, you know, at anything under than 100% last year in his rookie season. You know, a handful of touchdowns, a bunch of yards, really looked like a serious threat in this offense for Baltimore. But at the same time, you know, you have to wonder, he came into the draft, obviously having that surgery on his foot, obviously being of a smaller stature, a lot of pundits, you know, started wondering, hey, is this guy's going to be able to hold up to NFL football for the long haul? And ultimately, Brown had a handful of injuries, I believe a hip injury, an ankle injury, as well as that kind of foot that was nagging him. So those question marks seem to be warranted. Him getting himself right in the offseason to give himself the best chance to be healthy come the regular season, I think is a number one for him. And if he's going to have a long career, he's got to be able to do that. But at the same time, the surgery, from what I understand, was really more or less just to ensure that there are no further complications, that it's something that doesn't bother him down the line, that it's not something that's just kind of rattling in there or impedes the healing process in a way that's just kind of going all natural will. So we'll see exactly what happens. I think probably the next month or two is going to be important in terms of his recovery time and exactly how he's feeling. And my guess is we'll kind of hear some more stuff ahead of you know, the end of free agency and training camp and the like, we'll hear exactly where he's at and how he's feeling overall. Cause he was very transparent about it last year saying, look, I'm not 100%. I'm not going to be 100%. I'm faster than I am right now, but you're still going to like the results. So I think all positives here for Baltimore when it comes to Marquise Brown getting that screw removed.
Yeah, definitely. I'm all for it. I mean, if he's 100% healthy, if this ensures that there are going to be no more complications, Marquise Brown is going to be a threat in year two. He could do it at 70% in year one, 100% in year two, a whole different story. But we're going to head to our first break now. When we get back, we're going to be talking about some free agency and trade news for Baltimore, seeing who could be a good fit on the roster with the new amount of news that has come out. So stay tuned for that, and we will be right back. Welcome back to the second segment of this Purple Friday Locked On Ravens episode. Kevin Oshecker is still here with Matthew Stevens. And we just talked about general Ravens news. But now let's talk about some free agent and trade targets, some new free agent and trade targets that could be on the table for the Ravens. And we'll start off here with a rumor that surfaced a few days ago that the 49ers are open and will listen to offers on wide receiver Marquise Goodwin. Now, Marquise Goodwin, just like his Ravens, I guess not counterpart, but just like Ravens receiver Marquise Brown, is a small stature. Marquise Goodwin's only 5'9", but he has speed. And his stats might not pop off the stat sheet, but I had to ask, Matthew, do you think that the Ravens would be inclined or would be doing the team a favor by giving up, say, a fifth or a sixth round pick for Marquise Goodwin, a guy who could maybe slot in the slot on the outside and really give the Ravens a good 1-2 punch as speed receivers?
Well, I think so. I mean, I think if you're going to give up anything for him, it's going to be a late round pick. I mean, last year he had 186 yards and a touchdown over 9 games. Of course, that's a smaller season because he went on IR, but you know, even 2018, a very similar thing, 23 receptions, 395 yards, 4 touchdowns. I mean, his best season came in 2017 where he played a full 16 games, still didn't get 1,000 yards and only put up 2 touchdowns. So that's a guy that is, you know, a big play receiver. Certainly his yards per reception indicate that. I mean, 15.5, 17.2, 17.2. He seems to be tracking that way. So I think it's, you know, especially if you're going to let guys like Chris Moore end up leaving in free agency, getting a late round pick for a guy like that, or paying a late round pick for a guy like that, allows you to end up getting some depth to Marquise Brown in case he's injured, as well as kind of doing what Kansas City did, which is, you know, look, we're just going to overload you with speed. You cannot have 4 guys who can run 4.2s. In the 40-yard dash. You just don't. So how are you going to manage this? All right, fine, you managed it. Can you go ahead and take Mark Ingram pounding up the middle? No, is the answer. So I think, you know, it makes sense. The key there is, do you like his contract? And ultimately, when you look at it, just under $4 million for 2020 and just under $6.5 million for 2021. So an affordable wide receiver, maybe his 2021 salary, it can probably be altered around a little bit, but it's still pretty manageable, everything considered. And if you do trade for him, you can always outright cut him in 2021 and ultimately save, again, just shy of $6.5 million. So, you know, if you're Baltimore, it makes sense. A sixth round pick probably is as high as I would go on him, but it makes sense. You know what you're getting out of Goodwin versus trying to draft a guy in the fifth or sixth round and making something happen.
Yeah, definitely. I think Marquise Goodwin could be a very intriguing and a very nice addition to this Baltimore receiving core. But moving on to a defensive position, the Giants released linebacker Alec Ogletree just a few days ago. And this is another intriguing thing for me because the Ravens have LJ Fort, but Josh Bynes and Patrick Owusu are both free agents. And my inclination, my feeling, my gut feeling is that the Ravens are going to want to bring in a veteran, so whether that be Josh Bynes, if they re-sign him, Alec Ogletree, or bigger fish like Joe Schobert, and then bring in one guy through the draft. So if it's Kenneth Murray or Patrick Queen in the first round, or Shaq Quarterman later in the draft, I think the Ravens are going to have a veteran and a young guy from the draft they're going to bring in through free agency. Do you think that Alec Ogletree could be an option for that veteran slot if that's the route that they go?
Absolutely. I mean, I think you're going to have to figure out exactly what his market is, but you know, this is a guy that has a ton of tackles over his career, both for St. Louis Rams when they were St. Louis, as well as the LA Rams and the New York Giants. So, you know, the guy has definitely been around the block a little bit. He's going to be turning 29 this year or this season. So, you know, he's at toward the tailor end of his career, but that's a guy that you can pick in. You could probably slot in pretty quickly and you don't necessarily have to worry about it. And you know, he's going to be relatively cheap compared to probably the handful of guys that are actually going to hit the market at the top of the market, you know, guys like Judon and whatnot. So, you know, I think if you're Baltimore, again, you have to kick the tires on him just to see maybe what he wants and what he's looking at in terms of a market. But that would be the type of guy that I would expect Baltimore to go after, regardless of if they re-sign Judon or not. Again, that's that second or third tier level guy that's going to be a relative bargain for what you're going to get out of him when everything's all said and done, even if it's just a year or two contract.
Yeah, definitely. Again, another guy who I think the Ravens could be wise to, again, if the market's right, just like you mentioned, bringing on a cheap deal, and then that would probably pave the way for an early round linebacker, Kenneth Murray, Patrick Queen, even Troy Dye, a guy who I really like. But moving on to more defense, the Jacksonville Jaguars are going to release Marcell Dareus and Jake Ryan, the defensive tackle and the inside linebacker. Now, Marcell Dareus is an intriguing option because he can provide pressure on the inside, and his cap hit was astronomical, so no surprise that the Jaguars cut him. Jake Ryan, the former Packer linebacker, now Jaguars linebacker, well, now free agent, is another intriguing option who you could say, well, would you rather have him or Alec Ogletree? So are those two options you see Baltimore maybe kicking the tires on and saying, hey, if the price is right, come on in?
Definitely, definitely. And Dareus is a guy that I would look at maybe as a Michael Pierce replacement. You know, again, going to be 30 years old in 2020. So, you know, he's at the end of his career, the tail end of his career, and he hasn't put up a whole lot of sacks or even quarterback hits over really the last 4 or 5 years now. So he's never really hit that premium that he hit in 2014 that ultimately saw him get, you know, some big money after putting up 10 sacks and 14 quarterback hits as a defensive tackle. But he's a guy that, again, if he's on the cheap, if he's a relative bargain, might be cheaper than Michael Pierce to re-sign. You might be able to get him for a year or two. You stock up in the draft to go ahead and eventually replace him and transition. That's a solid option if you're Baltimore. Again, a stopgap option. As far as Jake Ryan goes, look, I mean, he bounced himself out of Green Bay. Jacksonville didn't get a whole lot out of him, only 2 games this last year. It went on injured reserve, so, you know, that didn't help anything there. But that's a guy that, you know, he has the tackles, 81 tackles, 82 tackles in 2017 and 2016, was out of football 2018 entirely. But I don't know if Jake Ryan's your guy, but I think if you're looking for a guy that maybe has some experience, again, is going to be dirt cheap, maybe you can bring in kind of like what Baltimore has over the last handful of years with these guys that just never really panned out, but still have a lot of talent. And maybe you can see what they'll do in your scheme or with your coaching staff. Maybe you can get them to develop. And ultimately, if you can't, you let them go. You paid next to nothing for them. What Shane Ray last year was is a perfect example at outside linebacker. For that exact type of signing. So Jake Ryan, again, I think if you're Baltimore, you know, that might be an intriguing option for him, especially since he gets to choose where he gets to go. Baltimore needs help at outside linebacker, so he's more liable to get some more meaningful snaps here in Baltimore. And at the same time, you got to love Wink Martindale. You got to love what he's going to go ahead and have you do. And if you're going to get anything, if you're going to ever show that you're capable of doing a lot of really good things, Baltimore has to be kind of the location for you in order to turn out a solid performance.
Yeah, and the last thing I want to kind of talk about here before we head into our final break is just how attractive is Baltimore this offseason as a free agent destination in general? I mean, over the years, they've kind of been overshadowed by places like even Cleveland, for example, but in past years, it's been New England, the top tier teams who have really had the upper hand, Kansas City. There have been a lot of teams who have overshadowed Baltimore just because, you know, Baltimore hadn't been in the top team realm, but now here we are, 14-2, right, coming off a really strong season. How attractive and how different is this offseason for Baltimore? How attractive is Baltimore as a free agent destination?
you got to imagine they're probably the top. I mean, A, you've got Lamar Jackson, who every player, I believe it was Eric DaCosta, was saying that, you know, at the combine, guys are telling him, oh, man, tell LJ what's up. You know, hey, how's it going? Like, you don't even know the guy. And guys coming into this league are like, that's my guy. So you got to imagine other guys already in the league kind of feel the same way. They'd be excited to play with Lamar Jackson, even if they're defensive players, get a chance to see what he's like in person on his team instead of having to try to tackle him, which did not pan out well for a number of players in 2019. But if you're an offensive player, again, Baltimore seems to be a really good spot coming off of a very hot season offensively. They retained their offensive coordinator. They have a lot of the same guys already in there. They just need a few pieces here or there to maybe really kind of step out of their way and become an even more historic offense. So if you're a wide receiver, it's maybe, again, toward the tail end of your career, and you're looking for a Super Bowl ring, Baltimore has to be super attractive. If you're a defensive guy, either A, you just have never really kind of put it together. It just like Jake Ryan we were talking about, you need to go ahead and show off. Baltimore is a good location for that, I would think. You're going to get some good coaching at the very least, and depending on the position, you might get some meaningful snaps. And if you're a guy, again, toward the tail end of his career, Marcell Dareus, a perfect example there, and you've never won a Super Bowl, man, Baltimore seems to be the attractive option. And as you mentioned earlier on, Kevin, a lot of those teams that have attracted those types of guys on super dirt cheap deals have been teams like New England, have been teams like the Kansas City Chiefs, where you can go, look, we're actually fighting for a Super Bowl right now. You could legitimately win one right here. We're at the top of the odds books, so you know you're in the right spot for it. All we need is you need you to come onto this roster, and you're the key. You tell five, six guys that that they're all keys, that they're the only piece that Baltimore needs to go ahead and win a Super Bowl. But the reality is those guys buy into that, and they come in, and they're willing to take a lot less money to play for Baltimore than to go to Cleveland, potentially be 8-8, but for more money. So I think, again, the guys that in the last 3-4 years of their career, super attractive option. The guys that haven't necessarily panned out thus far, again, a super attractive option for Baltimore.
Yeah, and you mentioned the guys who maybe would want to come to Baltimore for a little less money, not go to Cleveland. Tony Jefferson was a prime example of that. Happened to turn down more money from Cleveland to come to Baltimore, and obviously that story didn't have the happy ending that we all wanted it to. But another example of, yeah, maybe Baltimore's been outshadowed by some teams in the last few years in free agency, but they have been a coming up and up and coming free agent destination. But we're going to head into our final break now. When we get back, we're going to be talking about the draft, talk about more positions the Ravens could be interested in, more players as well. So stay tuned for that, and we will be right back. Welcome back to the final segment of this Locked On Ravens Purple Friday episode. Kevin Ostreicher still hanging with you here with Matthew Stevens. And Matthew, as we get into this draft talk now, one point that I didn't mention from Eric DaCosta's press conference, and I don't think you touched on it either, so I want to talk about it here, is the fact that DaCosta said that the team is open to maybe drafting another running back this year. And we've talked about this on previous shows, and we were kind of like, okay, well, where does it fit on the roster? Where would a running back fit on this roster with Justice So, who the team just drafted last year, Gus Edwards, and Mark Ingram? Not to mention, I mean, the Ravens have been a running back factory over the last few years. I mean, you can talk about guys like Kenneth Dixon, DeLance Turner, for example. So it's not that they have trouble drafting talented linebackers and coming up with those sleepers, but I don't really see where another running back fits on this roster unless you're thinking about trading Justice Hill or letting Gus Edwards go or trading Gus Edwards, because I don't think Mark Ingram's going anywhere. So what was your initial reaction when Eric DaCosta said that?
Well, you know, whenever I hear anything from any GM or any coach or any owner at the scouting combine when it comes to the draft, I immediately take everything with a giant bag of salt, because a lot of this is smoke and mirrors. They want people to think that, you know, Baltimore might actually take a running back. So maybe you need to jump in front of them, or, you know what? Hey, we're not going to take a wide receiver, despite that guy kind of being there. You know, you start playing that a little bit now, especially to lay down some ideas for the draft itself and maybe get yourself into a better trade or more potentially to force another team to jump in front of you to grab a guy that they think you're going to take, that ultimately you have no interest in whatsoever, and you force them to go ahead and spend draft equity to grab a guy that you never had on your radar to begin with. So, as you mentioned, Mark Ingram, not going anywhere. I mean, he's due, $5.33 million this year, according to Over the Cap. If they cut him, it's a little over $2 million savings. That doesn't really make a ton of sense, given how good he was last year. Gus Edwards is on an exclusive rights free agent deal, or will be if he's re-signed this year, which, as an exclusive rights free agent, he can only sign with Baltimore unless they decide to not give him a deal and let him hit free agency. But again, that wouldn't make any sense because that's going to be peanuts. So then you're really looking at Justice Hill, who, if I'm correct, was a fourth round pick last year. Baltimore typically doesn't give up on those guys very, very easily. And they seem to kind of favor him at times last year in certain roles. So they seem eager to kind of grow with him. So they've got three running backs. If they're going to take one, my guess is they're going to take in one late, seeing what happens, see if he can't maybe beat somebody out, or if they don't need to keep four running backs on the 53-man roster, which would be a stretch. But more than likely, probably push a guy or two out to the practice squad, just so that way you can leave him sit there, because running backs in this league are kind of a dime a dozen. They're probably not going to get poached from the practice squad as quickly as a quarterback or a wide receiver or a pass rusher would be. So that would be my guess, is later on in the draft, if they like a guy that has maybe kind of fallen, maybe that's the guy they end up taking. But I don't see the roster space for this team for them to grab anybody in day one or day two.
I agree. I think that the Ravens should use their draft capital a lot, you know, not smarter than that, but I think that there are other options on the board in terms of taking positions of need instead of a running back. But now, Matthew, heading into the combine talk and just the drill talk in general, when you look at all the drills and you look at the Ravens' needs, overall, in general, for all positions, which combine drill do you think has the most impact on a player's draft position, and why do you think that?
Oh, man. Well, it's going to be different for every position. The 40-yard dash, probably not super important for offensive linemen. If your offensive lineman's running 40 yards, you're probably scored a touchdown, because either that or he's something bad happened and he had to run 40 yards the other direction. So again, it's going to kind of differ for each position. I think for the skill positions, it's your speed and agility ones. It's going to be, you know, your 40-yard dash. It's going to be your three-cone drill, the 20-yard and the 60-yard shuttle. For positions like running back, I think, you know, you need to show a lot in the broad jump or the vertical jump. That's going to be a lot of the power in those legs, which for a big bruising running back or even a smaller running back, you need to be able to show that you can kind of drive through contact. For any position that gets hit on every single play, so that's your guys in the trenches, it's going to be bench press, it's going to be vertical jump, and it's going to be broad jump are going to be your main ones. Again, you'll want to see that power in the trunk. You want to see the power in the hands and the arms. I want to see guys being able to make a quick punch. I want to see guys being able to kind of hold their own if they're not out on an island, because you never are on the offensive or defensive line, but be able to hold their own one-on-one or potentially even as a double team if you're a defensive guy. So, you know, everything kind of matters ultimately. The obvious answer, I think, is the 40-yard dash when it comes to a lot of the skill positions. Man, I just want to see how fast a guy is, especially a wide receiver. If I've got a guy that runs a 4.2 anything, I'm pretty much just going to run him deep every single play. That's going to be the thing. And certainly with Baltimore's offense, that seems to be kind of what they're doing with their speed guys, is, look, let's send you deep. Let's go ahead and take that safety out of there. So that way either we're going to hit you in the middle with the tight ends or a slot receiver, or we're going to go ahead and run it right up the middle. If you're going to take a safety and shadow that guy or shade him toward his way. And if you're not, I've got one-on-one coverage, baby. I'm going for that all day long. It's the Joe Flacco special. So 40-yard dash is one that I always love paying attention to, but all of them are pretty important to in various different ways.
Yeah, I agree with you. And just staying on that topic, how do you think the combine really affects people's draft stock? Do you think teams really take notice and say, you know, hey, we're going to mark this guy down two rounds because he didn't do this well? I mean, obviously that was the case with Orlando Brown, but how often do you see that happen with players? And do you think the combine is really what teams are judging, or do you think it's more tape? What do you think in terms of ratio, you know, combine to tape, or what teams are looking at?
Well, you know, just like with the drills, I think it's going to depend on the team. I mean, clearly a ton of teams value the combine results, maybe more than they should. And you look at, you know, DK Metcalf last year, for that matter, a guy who just a beast in everything. If I'm correct, set an NFL rookie record last year as well. But one bad drill suddenly sent him out of the first round, despite everyone at the beginning of the process going, that's a first round pick. He looks like a first round pick. He acts like a first round pick. He's built like a first round pick. That's your guy. I mean, there was some comparisons to Calvin Johnson at one point. And then suddenly one bad drill and he's not a first round pick anymore. You look at Orlando Brown, another guy, exactly like you mentioned. Figured to be a first round pick, maybe a late first round pick, but the dude fell to the third round. Why? Because he had a bad combine. Good teams, I think, use the combine to maybe get exact numbers. I know a guy's fast, but how fast? Is he a 4.22 guy or is he a 4.29 guy? That 0.07 of a second really does matter in a lot of ways and could maybe, depending on exactly what you want to do, maybe go ahead and have you juggle some guys around on your specific draft board, depending on your scheme. But again, it all really depends. It should be that teams look at these and just go, look, does it confirm or does it smash what I saw on tape? But far too often in terms of the results itself on draft day, we've seen teams reach for guys who put up blistering numbers in the combine, but were just awful in college and didn't put up any production and had serious issues. And then we also see the opposite happen, like Orlando Brown, guys who do poorly in the scouting combine drop, but ultimately end up having really good careers because, hey, people stopped watching their tape for some reason.
Yeah, I think that teams do overvalue the combine a bit. You know, when I analyze, yeah, the combine's important, but you also just have to look at the tape. You know, what have they done in a professional competitive setting? I mean, not professional, probably can't say that because of the NCAA, but just a competitive setting. But now moving on to, you know, in the spirit of the combine, I want to get your draft crush at this very point in time. Obviously, I know this changes, but as of today, as of right now, who's your biggest draft crush for the Ravens?
Man, there's a few of them. The guy that I don't think he's going to fall to him, but I think he maybe has a better chance of falling to Baltimore than some of the other guys would be Ruggs. And obviously that's the guy we're sitting here watching and paying the most attention to. Baltimore really needs a number one wide receiver. Marquise Brown, while fast, is small, is maybe a little bit more fragile, is kind of, I think, a niche player. You need a guy that can kind of do a little bit of everything, and that's going to be Ruggs. He's big, he's fast, he's able to go ahead and work inside, he's able to work outside, he's got good route running, he's got good hands. That's a guy that's super exciting for me as a football fan and also as an analyst and seeing what Baltimore might be able to do if they get a guy like that. That being said, probably not going to fall down to Baltimore, but still, that's kind of my draft crush as of right now. If I'm going to go with a guy that will potentially fall down to Baltimore, more likely will be available to Baltimore, Grant Delpit's kind of a guy that I've really been excited about at safety. I know fans aren't necessarily going to like that if that's the pick, but dude's everything that I think you would want out of a safety for Baltimore, especially sitting behind Chuck Clark and Earl Thomas for at least a year. He's going to be able to soak up so much information, and he's already crazy good coming into the draft, just tweaking that and improving it a little bit while he kind of sits and maybe plays some off snaps. Dude, that's draft crush right now.
Yeah, I remember the days when Henry Ruggs was considered, you know, pick 26, 27, 28 in that range. Yeah. Those were the days. And I wish we were still on those days because it seems more and more likely. I mean, there are reports that the Jets really like him in the early first round. He could potentially go before guys like CeeDee Lamb. Maybe a surprise of the draft there. So I think that Ruggs would be an amazing player. I mean, if he falls to 18, 19, 20, I wouldn't be surprised if Baltimore makes a move up. I mean, they have the draft capital to do so. And I mean, depending on if they trade Hayden Hurst, if they tag and trade Matthew Judon, they could potentially have even more. So even if Ruggs falls into the 15 range, 16 range, Baltimore might want to make a move to secure their guy. So I'm with you. I think Henry Ruggs would be an amazing addition. I mean, what a player. Just watching his tape, watching him play, all-around guy, does a lot of stuff well. So I think he'd be great in the Ravens offense. But that's all I have for you today, Matthew. Thank you once again for coming on the show. And next week, we will have a lot of combine results to digest and dive right into.
Absolutely, man. Thanks for having me. And I'm excited to see all these drills and how all of these guys did and maybe who kind of pushed themselves either into Baltimore territory by dropping or who might have kind of really surprised here at the combine and might have pushed themselves up into the first round and maybe right around Baltimore's number 28 pick.
Definitely. Draft stocks will be changing. And when we get back in 2 days, we'll be talking about more Ravens football in the combine as well. So stay tuned for that. And I will see you on Monday.